It's gonna be scary. Not for us.
All engine running. Liftoff.
To Hart on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win of three. He got it! He got it!
This ain't my first rodeo.
Westbrook to the basket. Turns Schroeder around. Russell Westbrook.
House the three and the lead. You betcha.
Covington, biggest shot of the game, and he hits it. The corner.
PJ Tucker.
Gordon by
Gordon Ranch.
It's time to accomplish something together that we haven't accomplished before.
We both understand that we have one common goal, and that's to win a championship, so.
Let's get it.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin. You can track me down on Twitter at JT Gatlin, and of course, our show is on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. And past that, if you guys have listened to the show before, you know the drill. If you appreciate what we do here, subscribe to us, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast, subscribe, drop us a review, leave us some stars. I would sincerely appreciate it. So for today's episode, before I jump into my Russell Westbrook kind of spotlight of the season, headed into the season, his expectations, how he's performed so far, similarly to what we did with James Harden in the last podcast. I will get to that in just a moment, but first things first, you know, a little bit more of the coronavirus update. So more and more NBA players are testing positive for COVID-19. So three different Philadelphia 76ers were announced to have tested positive. Two different Lakers, one of which being JaVale McGee, have tested positive for COVID-19. And then lastly, Marcus Smart of the Boston Celtics has tested positive. So this virus is really making its way throughout the NBA at large. And it's only, you know, again, I'm still of the mindset that I do think the NBA season will return at some point. You know, again, whether that's they do a modified remaining stretch of the regular season as kind of not quite like a preseason type thing, but, you know, you give teams maybe another 10 games to kind of get back into the swing of things and then jump into the playoffs and have a modified regular season schedule. And then you push back the start of next NBA season or what have you. I still think it's going to happen. It's tough with how slow everything has been moving, at least stateside, because, you know, the lack of available test kits and things like that have definitely impacted how quickly teams have been able to monitor and test their players, and not just the players, but professionals within the organization who have to travel with the team, you know, broadcast crews and trainers and all this stuff. So it's definitely an interesting situation in that we've never seen anything like this before. And at the heart of it all, what matters most is the safety of everybody involved, the health and safety. So as much as I want the NBA back, and I'm sure all of you want the NBA back as well, what's most important is the health and safety of the players, their families, the staff, all that. So however long it takes, so be it. You know, just make sure everything's okay, make sure everybody's good, and then we can get back to our NBA basketball. So moving on from that, Russell Westbrook, right? In his first year as a Houston Rocket. So largely, I'm impressed with Russell Westbrook. I'm going to open with that. I am astounded at the transformation that he's made as a Houston Rocket. But I think if you look back, and here's the thing, is hindsight is always 20/20, right? Hindsight, you look back and you're like, oh yeah, you know, we shouldn't have been. I think the expectations placed on Westbrook when he first started the season with the Rockets were too high. Even my own expectations of him. I expected MVP caliber Russell Westbrook right out of the gate. And I don't think that was fair to him. And I think a lot of other people felt the same way. So when he started the season and we got some of this, for lack of better, it was kind of lackluster play from Westbrook. I mean, so I did the same thing that I did with James Harden, and I kind of split up his season into different chunks. And so I have Westbrook's season split. The first chunk that I have for him is all the way up through November. And so through that point, all the way through November 30th as a Rocket, Westbrook averaged 22 points a game, shot 23% from behind the arc, just 43% from the floor. He was bringing in, you know, 8 rebounds, getting 7 assists a game. Turnovers are about where they've been for much of his career for a game, but really it's the efficiency and the raw scoring numbers that were just not there. He was also only getting 6.5 free throw attempts a game and only converting on 4.5 of them for 70%, or just over 70%. So that first chunk of the season for Russell Westbrook, not great. And I think that, again, coming in, the expectations placed on him was that we thought that we were getting another MVP guard to pair along with James Harden. But what a lot of people didn't think about, myself included, I'm not trying to remove myself from this group because I had the same issues. Westbrook hadn't played all summer. So when you don't play all summer, when you're coming off of an off-season knee scope, coming into the season, you haven't played five-on-five ball all summer, you're not quite in shape for what he needs to be, you know, his level of prime physical fitness to be able to accomplish the explosive, insane athletic feats that he can do out there on the basketball court on a nightly basis, he wasn't able to do all that. You know, we saw flashes early on in the season, you know, through October and through November. We saw moments of what Russell Westbrook could be in this Rockets offense. But I think coming in, the expectations were a little bit too high. And there was a concern of how are you going to pair James Harden and Russell Westbrook? Because like I already talked about in the James Harden spotlight, there's the concern of Westbrook is not an off-ball player. You can't just spot Westbrook up in the corner or in the slot or at the top of the key or whatever like you could Chris Paul and just expect him to hit a wide open three-pointer. And that was the issue, is that's how they tried to play it to start things out. So to kind of look at his numbers for the first month or so of the season and even past that, because he really didn't eliminate the three-point shot from his game until about January. So for the first month of the season, all the way through November 30th, he was shooting over 5 threes a game and only converting on 23% of them. There was legitimately a concerted effort by the front office, by the coaching staff, and by Russell Westbrook that said, hey, we want you to take wide open threes. If you have the wide open shot, take it. Because they thought, okay, if he takes only wide open threes, which he gets a lot of them in the Rockets offense, if he only takes the wide open threes, he'll shoot a higher percentage on them than he ever has. You know, the hope was probably to get him somewhere near his MVP campaign of three-point shooting, which is his best three-point shooting season by far at about 35%. Every other season that he's played in the NBA, he hovers around 30 to 32%. And this season, he's even farther below that. I don't have his complete three-point shooting average, but I'd be shocked if it's even above 30% at this point because of how badly he shot the ball for the majority of the season. So coming in, I think the expectation was to try and mold Russell Westbrook to fit the Rockets system a bit more, which means limit the mid-range, increase the three-point volume, and focus on what he excels at, which is shots right at the rim, the layups, the dunks, and then getting to the free throw line. And I don't think that worked. And I think it took him about a month to realize that it wasn't working. And then moving past that first month of the season, that's when they really took a look at it and they were like, okay, the three-point shooting isn't working with Russ. We have to try something different. So coming up, we'll talk about the next break in his season, the next kind of segment that I have laid out, which would be December. So we'll get to that in just 1 second. But first, a quick message from our friends over at Postmates. Whether you're talking like an early morning breakfast burrito or a 12-pack of beers while you're watching the game or a rerun of the game, all things considered, sometimes you just need what you need delivered fast. And that's where Postmates comes in. So if you're like me, you might start thinking about what to eat for dinner while you're eating lunch. You know, I love food, and that's why I love using Postmates. They deliver food from every restaurant I can think of right to my door. But Postmates doesn't just deliver burgers and sushi. They actually make my life easier with grocery delivery and pretty much whatever I can think of delivery too. Convenience stores, clothing stores, you name it, they've got it. So no more trips to the store, no more late night fast food runs. I don't even have to worry about where to grab lunch anymore. Just download Postmates on iOS or Android. You can find your favorites and get anything you want delivered within the hour. For a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit. That's $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app and use code LOCKEDONNBA. That's code LOCKEDONNBA for $100 of free delivery credit with no minimum purchase for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it. And we are back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, shining a spotlight on Russell Westbrook and his season with the Houston Rockets so far, kind of the expectations we had for him coming into the season, how he's performed to this point, and what we would like to see him do better moving forward when the season does return. So I mentioned it headed out of the last segment, but this next kind of portion of the season that I have segmented off for Russ is basically December, because that's when we saw, so not only did Russ have the offseason knee scope and came into the season maybe not quite physically ready to start the NBA season, but he also struggled with the dislocated fingers on his shooting hand, and that absolutely affected his ability to not only shoot the basketball, but also to handle the basketball. I've never known Russell Westbrook to be a guy who was super tight with his dribble, but at the same time, I never remembered him being as sloppy as he was to start the NBA season. You know, it felt like at least two, three times a game, he would just start driving and just lose his grip on the ball. And that absolutely had to do with the dislocated fingers. You know, it's really hard if you've ever played with even one dislocated finger on one of your hands, not let alone two on your shooting hand. It makes it really difficult to have the same, you know, the same power, the same dribbling capabilities with the ball. You know, you just don't have that same touch. You don't have the same feel for it if you've got a wrap on, 40% of your hand. So I think that was a big part of his play to start the season as well. And it was early December, and I want to say it was either the Spurs game, which was, Dunkgate, or it was the road game at Toronto right after that. It was one of those two games that Westbrook officially he had the finger wraps removed. And so this is kind of where I want to segment the new, the next step in his Rocket season, because for that point, basically all of December. So from December 3rd all the way through December 31st, Westbrook averaged 27 points. His three-point shooting was still pretty rough because, again, he didn't eliminate the three-point shot until January. So he was shooting 23% still on 4.5 attempts a game. So they dropped a little bit. His field goal percentage is still not quite where we would have wanted it, 43% from the floor. But he was scoring more. He was getting, I guess, more acclimated to the system, kind of picking and choosing his spots where he wanted to score the ball. And the biggest part, I think, that kind of elevated his scoring numbers was his free throw shooting. So for the month of December, he still only got to the line 6 times a game, but he was shooting 90% from the line. And again, a large part of that, I think, came from getting the wraps off of his fingers, having a bit more touch on the ball, being able to finish a bit more around the rim, getting to his mid-range spots a little bit more. All of that came from getting the dislocated fingers better. And we've even seen since that point, we've seen moments in games where, there's a really hot pass comes his way, or somebody swipes at the ball as he's driving to the rim, and he still kind of grabs at that hand. So I don't even know if the dislocated fingers are 100% healthy, or if that's just going to be a consistent problem that he faces for the rest of his career or what, but he grabs at that hand quite often. So as long as he's not wearing a wrap on it, though, and as long as he's still, quote unquote good, then I'm happy with it. But past that, and this is the point where we really saw the evolution of Westbrook as a Houston Rocket, is January through February. So all of January and all of February. I have those two as one big segment. And I could have divided it because you do have the Robert Covington trade on February, the first game with Robert Covington, I should say, the away game at the LA Lakers at Staples Center, I should say. Wow, getting all kinds of tongue-tied. Take a second here. So you have the away game, right? At Staples Center against the Lakers, Robert Covington's first game. That could have been a segment on its own where I, take February 6th all the way through the end of February. But I think overall, Russ's play starting in January, even before trading Clint Capella, was significant because that was when he really eliminated the three-point shot and really took off as the Russell Westbrook that we expected to get at the start of the season. So from January 3rd, starting against the Philadelphia 76ers, all the way through February 29th, which was the road win against the Boston Celtics, Westbrook averaged just a hair under 33 a game, so 32.9 points per game, shot 53% from the floor, 32% from behind the arc. His free throw percentage did dip a little bit again. He's down to 76%, but 6.5 attempts a game, so that number still hasn't changed, which, side note, I think Westbrook is absolutely one of the worst officiated superstars in the league. You know, it took half a season of Rocket, or more than half a season of Rockets basketball, to really realize that, but the number of times that this guy drives to the rim and receives like an abundant amount of contact and doesn't get to the free throw line is ridiculous. And I don't know if it's just because he's exploding past his defenders too quickly, or not, you know, not initiating enough contact and, you know, looking more to finish rather than to draw the foul, but he should easily average 10 free throw attempts a game. You know, he is the league leader in drives per game. Last time I saw that stat, it was around 20 or 21 drives per game, and yet he's like 16th in free throw attempts per game or something ridiculous like that. He should easily be in the top five of free throw attempts per game. Anyways, sorry for that segue, but that gets me a little bit heated to think about. So this stretch from Westbrook was where he finally really unlocked the best version of himself in a Rockets jersey. And the biggest part, right, was eliminating the three-point shot. So I said, you know, I mentioned he's shooting 32% from behind the arc, but he's only doing it on 2.5 attempts per game. And he's only taking them within, really, it feels like within the flow of the offense. And I think that's the biggest part, is there was such an emphasis in the early part of the season, hey, if you're open, take the three. Whereas now, it's if he's open, sometimes he'll take the three. If he's completely wide open, there's a small chance that he'll take the three, but more often than not, he's looking to continue the motion to keep the defense scrambling and to drive the ball in against an unset defense. And Westbrook attacking a defense that is already scattered because of an initial drive by James Harden, or because the ball has been, you know, getting whipped around the three-point line and the defense is scrambling to cover the shooters, whatever it may be, that's when Westbrook is at his deadliest. And that's what we've seen largely for the last 2 months of the NBA season, was Westbrook at his deadliest, finally being comfortable in this offense. And then past that, you get the Robert Covington trade, and suddenly everything opens up for Russell Westbrook. We saw it a little bit before the trade, where when Capella wasn't in the game and they were, you know, running the tuck wagon lineup, the five out spacing, where Westbrook would use his size to take advantage of smaller guards in the paint. And he does that even more now. You know, the number of times that Westbrook goes down there and bullies smaller guards is amazing. It's something that I wish that we would see James Harden do more of, because James is even bigger and stronger than Westbrook is. So if you put James, you know, if you put a smaller guard on James, it should be barbecue chicken. But it's not, unfortunately. That's just, James doesn't play out of the post, unfortunately, and I wish he would. But seeing Westbrook use that in his repertoire of offensive skills is phenomenal. And kind of in similar thinking with, you know, James, and how I've harped on his predictability at times with the fact that he focuses so much on just the driving to the, directly to the rim, has kind of eliminated his floater because he doesn't have the lob threat anymore, and then focuses on the step back threes, obviously. Westbrook himself, he's a little bit predictable too, because you know now that he's not going to take the threes. But at the same time, his predictability is slightly different, you know, and this is why I wish James would modify his game a little bit, include a little bit more mid-range, maybe operate out of the post a little bit more offensively, because James has the ability to be flexible and to score from anywhere on the court. Russell Westbrook isn't going to shoot 37% on step back three pointers. Russell Westbrook doesn't have that in his repertoire, so he is limited to just the completely wide open 3-point shots, or the mid range, or operating out of the post and driving. And so Westbrook does everything that he can do well and includes it in his offensive arsenal. We know that James Harden can operate out of the mid range well. We know that he can post up a smaller guard and operate out of the post. We know that he can do those things well. He chooses not to, though. And that's what's frustrating to me, is because, again, Westbrook does everything that he can do well and uses all of it on offense at certain times throughout the game. Harden does not. So we have Westbrook's really great stretch, right? And this stretch, I mean, Westbrook was leading the NBA in points per game. I think the guy nearest to him was like Damian Lillard during the stretch, because obviously this coincided with Harden's slump in January. And that's the part that frustrates me the most, is because I feel like Westbrook's phenomenal play didn't get as much recognition as it should have. He very well could have probably won Player of the Month in January, or even in February, for that matter. I don't think you know, again, I don't think LeBron should have won it in February. I think it should have been Harden or possibly Westbrook, but then you have Westbrook who missed in February. He did sit out four different games for the Rockets, so that kind of hurts his chances at winning Player of the Month. But I think that if you look at, or sorry, he sat out three games, my apologies. But if you look at what he was able to do during that stretch, had the Rockets not gone 8-7 in January, and you know, if they had won some of those games that they dropped that they really shouldn't have, then I think you're looking at Westbrook potentially winning Player of the Month because of how well he upped his game in January. In fact, I was supposed to do a roundtable for Hoop Magazine right before the NBA season shut down, and so obviously the roundtable was scrapped. But in that, there was an interesting idea or suggestion of what would a two-part Most Improved Player Award look like. So you give out one Improved Player Award for the player who improved the most during the offseason all the way through December, and then you give a second Most Improved Player Award to the player who improved the most from December, or the end of December, I guess, so January, all the way through the end of the regular season. And I genuinely think that in that scenario, in that hypothetical, and this is not me having a Rockets bias, I genuinely think that Russell Westbrook could very well be a front runner, or could have been a front runner in that hypothetical scenario for the second part of that Most Improved Player Award, because you look at what he did for the first 2 months of the season, and then it's not just, and here's the thing, is it's not just, oh, he was injured, oh, he had the wrist wraps on his hands. No, he completely changed his game. For a guy who has shot, you know, where's his three-point shooting numbers for the years? Hang on, where'd it go? I've got it over here somewhere. All right, for a guy who has averaged for the past handful of seasons, let's see. So he's down to 3.8 three-point attempts per game this season on the Rockets. Now, granted, again, that includes the high-volume three-point shooting to start the season, which is no longer a thing. But last season with OKC, 5.6 attempts a game. The season prior to that, so the first season, 17-18, with Paul George, 4.1 a game. His MVP season, 7.2 a game. The season prior to that, 4.3 a game. So for a guy who has averaged basically over 4 three-point attempts per game for much of his career, to suddenly have that number and to not be chucking up bad three-point shots, you know, throughout the game just to try and, you know, either get in rhythm or whatever it may be, just, you know, these hero ball type shots, to see him completely do away with that middle of the season and focus on what he excels at, that is a huge, like, character development for Russell Westbrook, something that I didn't think he was going to be possible of, or is capable of, I should say. So to see that should be worthy of a, you know, quote unquote, most improved player award, to me at least. And so I think that was an interesting hypothetical, and I think that Russell Westbrook would embody that, just the way that he's changed his game for the second half of this Rockets season. So we'll get to the final segment that I have, the final portion of the season, which you guys already know it's going to be the losing streak. I had to highlight it. I had to keep that chunk separate to see, you know, exactly what was going on there. So we'll get to that, and we'll also get to talking about the, you know, some of the subtle changes that I'd like to see in Westbrook's game, you know, moving forward. So we'll get to that in just 1 second, so you guys don't go anywhere. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, chatting about Russell Westbrook and his season up to this point as a member of the Houston Rockets. And so, mentioned it, headed out of the last segment, but basically, his final stretch that I have, you know, portioned off is that losing streak, unfortunately. So Westbrook did sit out the first night of the back-to-back against Charlotte. So he didn't play in the Charlotte loss, but just kind of over the course of that little four-game stretch, you know, his numbers did dip a little bit. So he was only averaging 26 a game during that stretch. Three-point percentage down to 30%, field goal percentage a little bit under 50%, so right at 49%. So not great numbers overall. You know, this isn't me trying to highlight Westbrook and say, oh, he's the reason for the losing streak. No, there's a lot of reasons for that losing streak, but I just wanted to select that little segment because, again, that was the stretch where it did feel like the entire team was off, from James to Russ to the role players. The team wasn't playing well, so it's important to highlight, you know, where his numbers fell during that stretch. He also averaged 5.5 turnovers during that stretch, so that's not great either. in addition to those kind of segmented parts of the season, you know, I just like with James, I wanted to kind of pick out what I think Russ's best game as a Rocket and his worst game as a Rocket were. And so I kind of parsed through all of his games, and I really do think that his best performance as a Rocket came against the Lakers February 6th. So that first game with Robert Covington in a Rockets jersey, Rockets came away with the win 121-111, and Russ was phenomenal in that game. He really was. You know, in a game where James was pretty quiet again, you know, it struggled to shoot the ball. James only 1 of 6 from behind the three-point arc, just 3 of 10 overall. Westbrook brought it, and he brought the hell out of it. He had 41 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists. He shot 60% from the floor. I mean, 17 of 28 overall shooting, only attempted 2 3-pointers, and he was getting to the cup at will in that game. You know, it really felt like that was one of the first, because I think by that point it was his third 40-point performance as a Rocket, but it really felt like he was in control of that game, you know, more or less start to finish, you know, and this was just the first outing of small ball. And so the fact that in the first outing of small ball, Westbrook was able to drop 40, and we really saw how good it could be and how the spacing was working for the rest of the team, how many 3-point shots they were getting up, and wide open 3-point shots too. They were 19 of 42 as a team from behind the 3-point arc, and they were getting so many wide open looks. It was amazing to be able to come away with a win against the best team in the Western Conference in a game where James Harden largely struggled. That was the really impressive part, is you had Russ who went off. James had a bad game. The rest of the role players played pretty well, and you were able to come away with a 10-point W against the Lakers. Like, that was huge. So I think that was, by and large, his best game. I came really close to picking the second road game against the Clippers from earlier in the season, because that was another one of his 40-point games. But I think that this one meant a little bit more, because it was, and again, I talked about context with James Harden's best and worst games, and same thing here. The context behind this game was, it was the first game of small ball. Can't say it right. Small ball. There we go. And so, had the Rockets come out and lost this game, all of the haters, all the national media, they would not have shut up about it until the Rockets went and picked up a W. And even then, they would have kept going with, oh, it doesn't work against the good teams. You know, yeah, they picked up, you know, if they'd lost this one but then won the next night in Phoenix, then they would have been like, oh, yeah, small ball works against the bad teams, but it doesn't work against the good teams. That's exactly what would have happened. So I think as far as that context behind the game goes, I think that was really important. And so I think that's, to me, Westbrook's best game of the season and most important game of the season. Then, regrettably, we do have to talk about, I think, what is probably his worst game of the season. And that's going to be, and this one, it was honestly really tough, because there's not a lot of games that I really felt like Westbrook just didn't show up, I guess. And regrettably, there are a chunk of games for James Harden where it feels like he just didn't show up, because one thing you can't ever question with Russell Westbrook is his intensity and drive and effort. And so even if he has a bad game, it still feels like he showed up. And so I did finally settle on the Christmas Day loss against the Warriors. And I picked that one because I think this was the final turning point before Westbrook decided, and the organization, Westbrook, whatever, however you want to split it up, whether it was 50% Westbrook and 20% coaching or 30% Morey, whatever. However you want to split up the decision for Westbrook to stop shooting three-pointers, I think this was one of the games that really highlighted it shouldn't happen. Because Westbrook was 11 of 32 from the floor and 0 for 8 from behind the arc against the Warriors on Christmas Day. And again, the context behind this one, you're playing the G League, the Santa Cruz Warriors on Christmas Day, and this should have been an easy win. And this comes back to, you know, the Rockets have lost a handful of games this year that they had no business losing. They should very well be in contention for the second or third seed right now, and they're not. They're sitting comfortably in the sixth seed because they've lost too many games that they had no business losing. And this was one of them. You lose by 12 points to the Warriors on the road on Christmas Day, and a big chunk of that, a big problem in that game, was the inefficiency from Russell Westbrook. And this wasn't a game where James Harden struggled, unfortunately. James Harden wasn't Superman in this game. He only had 24 points, but he shot 6 of 10 from behind the three-point arc. And So, I mean, James Harden was playing well, I guess. And I'll kind of springboard off of this one into one of my points that I want to make about improvement for the rest of the season. But this game, again, it was kind of hard to pick one, but I did pick this one because the inefficiency was there. Russell had 30 points. He had 12 rebounds. He had 5 assists in this one. His stat line still looked great, but the inefficiency was just, you know, probably at times too much to overcome, shooting 34% from the floor, missing all 8 of your threes. Like, that's just a rough stat line. And so there's maybe a game or two elsewhere that you could argue were worse, but I think that this one takes the cake for me at least. So I said that I would use this game to kind of springboard into another point. And I think that through this season, especially early on, James was deferring to Russ quite often, trying to, you know, get him incorporated into the offense, get him comfortable with the system, that kind of thing. And then I think there was, I still think that they're still trying to work things out. I don't think this duo of Harden and Westbrook has hit their ceiling. I don't think they've gotten anywhere near their ceiling, honestly. You know, one of the comps for these two guys coming into the season, which I thought was pretty accurate, would be the LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, Miami Heat duo. Because you had Wade, who wasn't really a shooter, was a slasher, driver, you know, really needed the ball in his hands. And then you had LeBron James, who for basically his entire career was the offensive system. You give the ball to LeBron, you run pick and roll, you let him ISO, you basically give the ball to LeBron and get the hell out of the way. And that's basically what the Rockets offense with James Harden is. Now, obviously there's off-ball action and there are plays that are run, but largely it's give the ball to James and let him go to work. So I thought that comparison could be, you know, what this duo can live up to, and possibly even a more explosive version of that duo, simply because you have Westbrook, who, you know, yes, he's dealt with some injuries through his career, but D Wade was only D Wade for that first year of the Miami Heat before he really started to, you know, father time started to take its toll, the injuries and stuff, and he was kind of on that downtrend for the final 3 years of the Heat era. So I think that Westbrook being smack dab in the middle of his prime and showing really no signs of falling off, which there was a big concern. That was one of the concerns coming into the season, is how is Westbrook, a guard who relies so much on his athleticism, how is he going to age? And because of the start of the season, there were some concerns. People were like, oh, here it is. Father time is catching up to Westbrook. And turns out it was just the offseason stuff, right? It was the knee scope. It was the fingers. And now he's, you know, maybe not as explosive as ever, but he's still one of, if not the most explosive player in the league. So I think that I like to see them really work together on helping each other out. I think that they both draw so much attention that, you know, when we do see the 1-2 pick and rolls between James and Russ, there is so much attention focused on, you know, the guy who has the ball, that the guy without the ball can, you know, can slip, can get a wide open shot, or vice versa. Sometimes, like when James Harden sets the screen for Russ, there's so much focus placed on making sure that James is denied the ball, or that he's not going to get a wide open three, that Russ gets an easy driving lane to the basket. You know, I'd like to see a bit more of that be incorporated into the offense with both of those guys while they're in the game, rather than just having Russ standing off on the wing while James does his thing, or James standing off on the wing while Russ does his thing. And that's the other thing, is let James play off ball a bit more. Because, and I established this in the James Harden spotlight, but Russ is not able to play off ball. He's just not. He's not going to... you know, come, you know, curl off of the screen and catch the ball and shoot a three. That's just not who he is. That's not in his offensive repertoire, but it is for James Harden. So you let Russ handle the ball a little bit more, have James be a little bit more off ball. And while I don't necessarily know if that's going to be a possibility for the remainder of this season, I do hope that whatever happens after this season, whether things work out and, you know, the Rockets actually make some noise and maybe potentially come away with a championship, that'd be phenomenal. Everybody would be so psyched. But in the offseason, that's something that I think that these two guys should work on and can work on, right? To make this duo the best version of itself that it can be. Because Russ needs the ball in his hands to be effective. And when he doesn't have the ball in his hands, defenses are able to sag off of him. They're able to load up on James a little bit more. It makes sense for Russ to be the primary ball handler and for James to be the off-ball guy. That makes sense to me, and you can argue that the Rockets are at their best when the ball is in James Harden's hands, yes, but I think that there's another level that they could reach if James were to acquiesce and be a bit more off ball rather than be as ball dominant as he has been in prior years. So that's something that I'd want to see from him. And then I've harped on this before already with Russ, but you know, the number of times that he gets to the rim and just blows easy layups is maddening. You know, there's not a lot that I have to gripe about Russ for the past 2.5 months, the way that he's been playing, because he's been playing an insane level of basketball. But it's the not finishing at the rim when he gets, when he does all the work, you know, the explosion, the dribbling, the cross-ups, the all the work to get to the rim to beat his defender, and then just doesn't finish. That sucks. And then the turnovers, you know, and I've gone on record as saying that I think between Russ and James, as long as they're only getting between 8 to 10 turnovers a game, I'm content with that because of how much they handle the basketball compared to the rest of the team. That if they're only getting 8 to 10 turnovers a game combined, then the rest of the team can get, you know, 1 to 3 turnovers, 1 to 4 turnovers, and you're probably still leading the league in turnovers. Or not leading the league in turnovers, but leading the league in, you know, not turning and keeping the ball safe, whatever. So, but even then, there are some turnovers that Russ just shouldn't have. You know, whether he, you know, dribbles the ball off his foot before he makes his move, or just, you know, these heaters that he throws to some people, and they're not quite on the money because he's just not 100% focused on the pass or whatever. And then James Harden does the same thing. James has these, you know, lackadaisical passes, or he gets a little bit too fancy with it, trying to flip it behind his back or whatever. So it's two different versions of the same problem, committing these, you know, basically careless turnovers. I'd like to see him eliminate some of those. I think that there's at least 1 to 2 turnovers a game that Russ has no business committing. The other ones where he's just, you know, he's trying to thread the needle a little bit for a pass in the paint, I can get those, because that's just him trying to make something happen offensively. But it's the silly ones, right, where he dribbles the ball off his foot, where he doesn't have his handle quite right, and he, you know, takes off to the rim 90 miles an hour and forgets to bring the ball with him or whatever. It's those ones that I'd like to see him kind of get. You know, get those out of your game, Russ. You can do that. You're too good of a basketball player to be making those, you know, itty bitty mistakes. And then last thing is just defense, and it's not all the time, but it's the same thing that I harped on with James, is, you know, as the leaders of the team, and I can say leaders now because James has largely not been the vocal leader of this Rockets team for going on 3 seasons now. I think Russ is very much the vocal and emotional leader of this Rockets team, right there along with, you know, probably PJ Tucker. And so as the leaders of this team, you know, I'd like to see Russ and James take a little bit more pride in their defense. I think that Russ definitely has grown in this Rockets system, because if you go back and look at some of the highlights from earlier part of the season, there were miscommunications left and right. Russ was getting destroyed on defense. You know, he was getting lost every other possession. It was bad. Because a part of it's the switching scheme. No team switches more than Houston does. And so for him to come from a system that didn't do that to have to be in a system that suddenly switches everything, that was a learning curve for him. And so I do think that he's gotten significantly better about that. There's very few miscommunications now. He has gotten comfortable in the system. That being said, I do still think that there's plays where both he and James are not as honed in as they need to be. And having two guys out there in Russ and James that at times can be defensive liabilities, and sometimes are being defensive liabilities on simultaneously at the same time on specific possessions, that makes it really hard to be a top tier defensive team. One thing that you can say about Chris Paul is that he wasn't a defensive liability. He just wasn't. You know, he played smart defense. He played defense pretty much every possession that he was out there. And I cannot say the same for Russ or for James, unfortunately. And that's the issue, is because these two players were traded for each other, because Chris Paul was traded for Russell Westbrook, they will be compared. You know, we did a lot of comparisons early on in the season between the two, and even now, as the Thunder have a higher seed than the Rockets, there will be comparisons drawn between the two and how this trade has worked out. But I think this trade was the best possible case scenario for both players. You know, I don't think Chris Paul would be playing nearly as well in the Rockets system as he is the Thunder system currently, and vice versa for Russ. I don't think Russ would be thriving the way that he is as a Houston Rocket for the past 2.5 months, the way that he's been playing. I don't think he would be doing that in an OKC jersey right now. I think it was the best possible scenario for both of these players to have themselves flipped. And I just think that the Rockets themselves have had, you know, they've dealt with injuries, they've dealt with, you know, some collapses here and there that they really shouldn't have. And I think that this is still, you know, it's still the first season between these two guys. The Rockets have these guys locked down for the next 3 seasons, 4 seasons. So having these guys locked down for a while, you're going to see the growing pains. And that's what this season was, is there was some growing pains. And again, I think the expectation was, okay, you bring in Russell Westbrook, why aren't the Rockets going 65-17 like they did when they brought in Chris Paul? I think it's just, it's a different season. You can't really compare the two, you can't really compare those two seasons and think, okay, the Rockets, you know, should have been playing, you know, insane levels of basketball. No, it's a process, to incorporate Westbrook. And if he had been playing the way that he started playing in January at the start of the season, then yeah, maybe the Rockets are one of the top seeds right now. But that's not how things work. You know, he needed time to get acclimated to the system, and I think by and large, he's done that. So I'm impressed with Westbrook and his time as a Rocket. I think that there's just, you know, a few minor areas that I'd like to see him improve on. And past that, I'm excited to see when Rockets basketball eventually does come back, and hopefully he keeps up the same level of play. We get James Harden back on his, you know, November, December level of play, and this team is going to be a handful to deal with moving forward. So I think that's kind of where I will wrap things up for in today's episode. As always, I appreciate you guys listening, and we look forward to having you back here very soon at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.